Welcome, everybody, to a regular episode of Podcasting Softly. It doesn't mean it's not special, it's just regular, which Nick and I have not done a solo one for quite some time. And, of course, I'm joined with Nick. Hi.
What's going on, buddy?
Not much. But this is a special podcast because this is a movie that Nick and I have been blowing each other hard over the past couple weeks, because I hadn't seen this in a long time, and I stumbled upon a picture by accident on Facebook or on Google, and I posted it on Facebook, and then Nick was up my ass about rewatching it because I hadn't seen this probably since college. So I watched the DVD, and then I bought the Twilight Time Blu-ray. And I know we're keeping everybody in suspense because you don't know what the film is that we're talking about yet, but I'm going to drop a bomb. It is Jonathan Glazer's Sexy Beast, which came out in 2000. And it is by far one of the best English gangster films of all time, even gangster films for that matter. And upon my rapid rewatching of the DVD and then the amazing Twilight Time Blu-ray that you can still get on Screen Archive's website, by the way, that has two different aspect ratios, this has quickly become one of my favorite films, kind of like how I saw The Counselor for the first time last year, and that's like solidified in my top 10 films of all time. This one I had seen prior, but I didn't have much recollection of, aside from Ben Kingsley just absolutely tearing it to pieces in this movie. And he was nominated for an Oscar for his performance. But yeah, this has quickly become one of my favorite films of recent memory.
Who beat him that year?
What was it, 2000?
Yeah, well, the movie came out in 2000. Who the hell could have beat him?
You know what else is interesting? Oh, man, Russell Crowe for Beautiful... No, he didn't win for Beautiful Mind, I'm sorry. Washington for Training Day. It was Denzel Washington, Will Smith, Russell Crowe, Sean Penn, and Tom Wilkinson for In the Bedroom. That's a pretty awesome year. For actors, by the way.
That is a pretty awesome movie. Wait, Kingsley was supporting actor.
You are correct.
So who beat him for supporting?
God, I'm an idiot. Jim Broadbent for Iris. I almost said Isis.
What?
Right. Okay. This is where shit gets crazy.
I mean,
I love him, but no.
But no. I mean, Iris,
John
is, a,
Boyd for
Iris
Ali.
Is a lovely
John
movie.
Boyd, awesome in Ali, but no. Ian McKellen for Fellowship of the Ring? No. And then Ethan Hawke for Training Day? No. You're right. I don't know why I thought he was lead, but yeah, no, he's supporting. And that is absolutely insane.
That's egregious.
That is egregious. And I feel bad because I love Jim Broadbent.
Me too. And Iris is a lovely movie. It's a lovely movie. But come on. I mean, like... It's Ben Kingsley and Sexy Beast. I mean, anyone with half a brain knows it's one of the premier performances that has come across screens in 50 years. I mean, I'm so glad that you got all.
Before we get too far, I would just want to like give a spoiler alert because I think you and I are going to be diving into like hardcore, like nuts and. This film. So if you haven't seen the movie, we're going to spoil it. But if you haven't seen the movie, you've had 16 years to see it, so it's not as bad as spoiling other stuff that we spoil. But anyway, continue.
No, I'm just so glad that you really got into it upon revisiting, because I mean, this for me was just like, I can remember vividly seeing it in the theater in Boston the summer that it came out, and I just thought it was just so unique and startling and different and amazing. And, I had just come back from California from interning out there and, really, really starting to get an idea of Jonathan Glazer's work with commercials and music videos. I remember seeing his reels and, you know, his name was all over charts, everybody's office. I mean, he's like one of the most, you know, celebrated guys in that field, the commercial and music video realm. And I remember saying to myself, oh my God, you know, this is his first movie. It's got to be amazing. And I remember seeing it, and it's just, it's a perfect movie. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It's 90, it's 90 flawless minutes with one scene that feeds into the next, and there's no fat, and it's so visual. And, you know, the script is certainly, certainly killer. I mean, like, the actual lines of dialogue that people are given, you know, fantastic. And the plotting is very, you know, very cool and different. But visually speaking, I mean, it's just the cinematography by Ivan Bird is just ridiculous. I mean, like, there's one shot after another that's just amazing to look at, you know, on a purely visual cinematic level. And, you know, and just to say nothing of the performances. I mean, Ray Winstone is just, he's just so good in it. And Kingsley goes without saying, it's just, it's a premier performance for him. And we're going to do top five Kingsley performances. You know, Ian McShane, you know, that's when American audiences, you know, he really busted out between that and Deadwood. You know, that really put him on the map over here. And then he got cast and everything. But it's just, it really is just a sleek piece of work that, you know, that's consistently rewarding on revisiting.
Yeah, I mean, I remembered very, very few things. The first time I saw it, I didn't see this in theaters. I saw it when I was in college, and the first time I saw it was on DVD, and I was really high on the pots when I watched this the first time. And I remember telling you that when I watched it for the first time, I had to turn subtitles on because I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand what they were saying. And even upon my rewatch of it when I was sober, it's still tough. Their accents that they use are insane. It's not just like the stereotypical English accent where it's like cheerio and like you can understand every word because they're enunciating properly with the English dialect. It's, you know, Ray Winstone pronounces anything with a TH with an F. So instead of saying thing, he says thing. And it's just like, what? And then enter Ben Kingsley, and you can't understand Ben Kingsley because he's talking so fast and so angrily that it's very hard. It's very hard to keep pace with Ben Kingsley. What I remembered before I rewatched it was I remembered the opening of Ray Winstone, not even sunbathing. I don't even know what you'd call that. Just like
he's getting cancer.
Himself and, yeah, he's giving himself cancer.
He's just giving himself cancer.
With all the tanning oil bottles knocked over next to his chair, and he is red, wearing a yellow Speedo. And it's just like, what the fuck? You know, because I knew going into this film that this was a gangster movie and Ben Kingsley's supposed to give like this tour de force performance unlike anything you've ever seen. And it opens with Ray Winstone giving himself cancer in the sun. And it's like, what is this? He's like overweight in a tight Speedo. And, you know, the credits are playing and it's, you know, neon pink lettering. And when Ray Winstone gets up from his lounge chair, he's like mid-step. And you can kind of see, like, you can't see his balls or anything, but you can, like, see the Speedo, like, peel away a bit, and then it freeze frames to Sexy Beast, and I get a kick out of that every time I see it. And it's just, it's so unconventional, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
This film, I mean, essentially it's got, like, the simple setup. It's Ray Winstone's retired. He lives with his wife in Spain. They have this awesome villa. He just hangs out all day long and does nothing. And he has their two friends over every night for dinner, and they have these like nice little dinner parties, and they drink and eat good food. And then the build-up of the first act is Ben Kingsley's coming because he wants you to do a job, and that's when everything goes to absolute shit. And then enter the second act where Ben Kingsley has a Long Good Friday-esque entrance in the airport, and it's just the movie goes from 0 to 100. Once Ben Kingsley enters the frame. I mean, I've never seen a performance like Ben Kingsley in this movie. And I mean, here's a guy who has given remarkable performances over the years. I mean, he was Gandhi, man. And he's in a bunch of awesome stuff. But 70% of the stuff he does is shit. He's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it is interesting.
You know, and I know he likes to get paid, and that's awesome. I mean, that's great for Ben Kingsley because he's already has an Oscar, and he's already been in Schindler's List and all sorts of stuff. But, I mean, he is pretty prolific, and he makes a lot of stuff. And some of it's good, some of it's bad, some of it's great. But it's interesting to now reflect upon Ben Kingsley's performance as this is one of the best performances of all time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. It is sort of startling how much crap he's done. It's you know, I mean, he's a great actor, but like, my God, there's been some stuff that is just not very good.
I know. It's like, you know, I know, not to get too far off base, I know you like Iron Man 3, and I love Ben Kingsley in Iron Man 3 till the big reveal. I think that's probably one of the best things the guy's done in a while. But you're right, it is startling. But let's get back to the sexy beast prior to us getting into Ben Kingsley. You know, here's the thing that Nick and I don't know if we see eye to eye on, which I think is an interesting point. The whole setup to the film is the job that they're going to do is put together by Ian McShane's character, Teddy Bass, who Ian McShane's amazing in this movie, by the way. I mean, he plays the same character he plays in everything else, but he's exceptionally great in this. He's just the badass mob boss that, like, comes up with a plan to rob this super secure bank by drilling through a sauna to get to the safety deposit box room so they don't have to go through these steel doors that are 4 feet wide.
It's like you've seen heist movies before, but you've never seen it with this particular heist. I've just loved it forever.
Yeah, without a doubt. And the best part is, like, the setup for Ian McShane to get this is he's at an orgy. And he meets James Fox, who's the guy that is the president of the bank. And they have sex. And then the next scene is Ian McShane going to the bank and putting a pack of Dunhills in the safety deposit box. You know, the camera's fixated on Ian McShane's face as he walks through the revolving door. It's brilliant. It's all brilliant. But here's the thing. I looked at it as Ian McShane is not bi or gay. I mean, he could be a straight guy. They never get into that. But I look at it as Ian McShane lets this guy have sex with him just so he can attain access to the bank. And you think that Ian McShane could be bi?
I've interpreted it in so many different ways throughout different viewings. I mean, I think that you could interpret it that he's bi and that he's an opportunist, but I think he's more of an opportunist, you know?
Right.
I think that he sees the opportunity to get something done that he wants done, and he knows what he needs to give up or, you know, use to his advantage. I think that, you know, his involvement in, you know, those elite, you know, sex parties sort of suggest a willingness on his part to do, you know, different stuff. But yeah, I think that overall it's probably best to interpret it as a guy who is, you know, very much in control of his own destiny and interested in, you know, getting the job done the way he wants it done, and he'll do whatever he has to do it.
I love Ian McShane's character in this film, though. What do they call him? His name's Teddy Bass, but he's the man in black. He's always dressed in black. He's got a slick back haircut, and he doesn't talk very much at all. And the interesting thing is before you know the actual fate of Ben Kingsley's character, is when Ray Winstone just says, fuck it, and he goes to England, and he's going to do the job, and then Ian McShane is up his ass about where Ben Kingsley is. But in this, like, smooth and subtle way, where they both know what is going on, but Ian McShane just wants Ray Winstone to tell him. Like, the dinner scene is great, where Ray Winstone's just enjoying a nice steak in London by himself, and he sees Ian McShane pull up outside the window, and then Ian McShane just you know, has that, he has that fast-paced walk where he's not moving his body, just his legs, and he's, his eyes are just fixated, and he just sits down with Winstone, who, yeah, you're right, Ray Winstone is fabulous in this movie, by the way.
And he's fabulous. Like all, he's all like understated and like, you know, he because the Kingsley role was written so explosively, and because Kingsley brought such a ferocious attitude towards it, Ray Winstone wisely underplayed everything and didn't go over the top like ever. And I think it's one of like the great things about the performance is that it's like, it's very modulated, and it's very, it's not a flat line performance, but he keeps his calm and his cool in so many different areas. And he's always trying to project this sense of cool. It's a very unique performance. It's a really cool character when you think about it.
Yeah, because he has this amazing life and he's this cool dude. Until Kingsley comes into the movie and completely removes him from his comfortable life, and then he becomes this sort of, Ray Winstone becomes this sort of not even a humbled, he becomes this weak character where his back's against the wall, and he's just trying to find a way out of it without making a mess. You know?
Oh, absolutely.
And you're right. I mean, it's so complex and it's so layered. It's not that it's low key. It's not. The way that he plays off of Ben Kingsley is fantastic. Because I mean, for those people who haven't seen it, I know a lot of people have, but for those who haven't, it's as if literally somebody put a bunch of cocaine in front of Ben Kingsley and pulled the ripcord on his back and said, go. Because Ben Kingsley is intense the entire movie. He's never not intense. And, you know, he's screaming and he's yelling and he's talking fast and he's erratic. And you know what I noticed upon my viewing today before we recorded is the scene where he's in the bathroom is the only time we see him when he's by himself, really. And he's talking to himself in the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm watching this, and it's he's a borderline schizophrenic.
Oh, it's purely psychotic. It's not even borderline. It's fucking insane. That whole scene where he's talking to himself and giving himself orders and, like, chastising himself and then pissing all over the floor, like, marking his territory like an animal.
Right.
And then literally attacks Ray Winstone in his own bed. Like, if you're not safe in your own bed, like, where are you safe? And, like, that was the thing.
Exactly.
That was one of the things I've always felt about that scene when he attacks him and smacks him in his sleep, and then the wife wakes up and she screams at him and tells him to leave. It's such a ferocious scene. And then you cut, if I recall correctly, don't you cut to the kitchen with like a very beleaguered Ray Winstone, like having to listen to him? Like, that's the yes Grosvenor, yes Roundtree sequence.
Yes. And then that's when Ray Winstone meekly calls out Ben Kingsley's motivation for being there. And that's when Ben Kingsley, it's as if he's amped up even more than he's been amped up. And he's like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. If you didn't want to do the job, that's fine, but fuck you. Call me a taxi. And then it's like he's in the airplane smoking a cigarette, and the Winstone crew thinks they're fine until Ben Kingsley won't put out a cigarette on the airplane, freaks out, gets out of it by saying he was sexually assaulted by two gay stewards on the airplane, and then comes back for blood to Ray Winstone's house. And, you know, what I think is so fascinating about this film is how layered it is and how it's not just a gangster movie. It's not just a heist film. You know, it has comedic elements, but what I am so fascinated and drawn to by this film is the fact that, or I should say, what Ben Kingsley's motivation is. And the only reason that he is going to get Ray Winstone all the way from England to Spain out of retirement is because he's in love with this woman that's friends with Ray Winstone. It's like Ray Winstone's best friend's wife, Ben Kingsley's in love with. And that is the sole reason he travels to Spain to get Ray Winstone out of retirement.
Yeah.
And you know,
it pays off in really funny, nasty ways at the end.
It does, and here's the big spoiler. When Ben Kingsley is shot in the stomach with a shotgun, And then he's, what, shot in the chest or the neck?
Yeah, in
wherever
the
throat, whenever the other, wherever the other slug goes, and he's being beaten by Ray Winstone, Ray Winstone's ex-porn star wife. He, like, peeks his head up to look at the woman to tell her that he loves her before he gets finished off, essentially. It is just insane.
Yeah, who says it's not a romantic movie?
And really,
the heart of the movie is the romance between Winston and his wife, and how essentially he's so not interested in that one last job. Like, he's just totally removed himself from that life, and he knows that there's really no way he's going to get out of it once he hears that Kingsley's coming to town. But then,
yeah.
But then when he dies, then when they kill him, he still has the job to do, so he has to do the job. But more to the point, all of it is born out of a love for his wife and just to try to keep things going and moving forward for them as a couple and, you know, as a unit. And I think that's one of the, you know, there's that one shot I think that speaks volumes about, like, Jonathan Glazer as a filmmaker. It's right after the first dinner. You see this superimposed image of him and his wife sort of, like, swimming in the night sky. Like, they, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And for me, that's, like, that's Jonathan Glazer, like, just knowing, A, what's cinematic, and B, you know, communicating an idea visually and telling you what somebody feels inside. Without having to use words. And I always thought that was just such a really cool moment, such a special little moment inside of this, like, otherwise nasty, hardcore, you know, gangster film. And I think that's what makes this movie sort of special, is that it is it hits a level of romance that never feels, like, cheap or cloying or sentimental.
Right.
And yet you have all of the other stuff that goes into it, you know, like the gangsters and the beatdowns and the, you know, the one last job and the impossible heist and everything else. Like, you get all these really cool ingredients, but at the same time, it mixes other ingredients that you might not necessarily get, or if you got them, they wouldn't be as well handled.
Right. Totally. And before we segue into our top five Ben Kingsley performances and then top five English crime films, I wanted to, you know, two things that I'm curious what your interpretations are. You kind of covered one of them with the, like, that imposed underwater scene of the two of them kissing.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of scenes that take place underwater in this film. When the mm-hmm. giant boulder comes down the hill and mm-hmm. almost kills Ray Winstone in the opening, and he's down in there with a little Spanish kid, who's awesome, by the way. I love that kid. And they're, like, trying to lift the boulder out. And it's just like, you know, how much time does he spend underwater watching the two of them do that? I mean, that's a good, like, 5-10 minutes in a 90-minute movie where everything is taut and paced incredibly well. And then, man, and then that heist scene, it's constantly everyone's underwater. Everyone's underwater with jackhammers and drills, drilling through this shit, moving concrete. They have respirators on while Ian McShane is pacing and chain-smoking cigarettes in his, like, trench coat and suit the whole time. Now, what do you think? Do you think it just happens to be there, or do you think there's something more when it comes to the underwater scenes? Because he seems to focus a lot on that.
I never thought of it that way. I don't know if it's just a coincidence or I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting point.
I kind of looked at it as, like, panic in a way. Because anything we see underwater is just, like, heightened suspense and panic.
That's true. And, definitely.
And I think that's, like, a reflection upon the film, particularly with Ben Kingsley, because that's what Ben Kingsley brings to the film, is heightened panic and terror. And then the other thing that I'm most curious about is the fucking werewolf.
Yeah.
Dude,
imagery. I mean, that's the sexy beast in everybody, and that's the
exactly.
sexy beast, you know, inside of Kingsley that's never going to stop, even in his death, even in the moment of his own death. I mean, All that stuff is just super surreal. And again, very, very Jonathan Glazer. I recommend, if people are fans of Jonathan Glazer's work, he's only made three movies, Sexy Beast, Birth, and Under the Skin. There's a really cool, DVD that you can buy on Amazon. It's his commercials and music videos, and the werewolf imagery will, you'll see it, not necessarily as a werewolf, but you'll see similar, visual motifs in some of his work. If you pick up that DVD set and give it a spin, you'll see where some of these specific shots in Sexy Beast come from. The werewolf imagery just grabbed me immediately when I first saw this film, and it's always stuck with me to this day. And I mean, the shot of the werewolf slowly raising that like hand M16, that like little like mini M16 that it's holding, or whatever. It's to this day, it's just like, it just sticks out in my head. It's just like one of those, you know, holy shit moments where you're just like, what the hell am I watching? And how does this, you know, how does this link up to what's going on? And I love that. I love when filmmakers take visual chances to tell something thematically.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. Nailed it. Because a lot of people that I've talked to about this, not just recently, but in the past, it's like, why is it called Sexy Beast? It's like, well, there's a literal sexy beast in the movie. You know? I mean, the werewolf is, or whatever it is, the sexy beast, is only in three scenes, but they're probably three of the most important scenes, especially the ending. I think the sexy beast shows up at the ending, I mean, another spoiler alert, but we've already went over it, kicks the coffin open, and Ben Kingsley's smoking a cigarette, and just dismisses the sexy beast. It's amazing, man.
Yeah, it's great. It brings the whole thing full circle, and it makes, if you weren't 100% sure throughout the film where that werewolf imagery was headed and where it was going, and if it was just random shit that like some artistic filmmaker was throwing in there, the last shot seals the deal. I mean, you know, it's fantastic.
All right, I just paused it. Go take
Thanks,
a piss.
Bro. Yeah.
You're welcome. All right, and now Nick and I are going to old school it up hardcore, and we are going to transition to our top five English crime films. So you want to start it off? And then we'll do Ben Kingsley after this one.
Yeah. I'm going to cheat a little bit.
Really?
Because it wouldn't be a top five list without me cheating once, or you cheating.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, well,
I'm lumping my number. What?
I said I tried to put In Bruges in my top five English crime films, and you browbeat me down.
I didn't browbeat you down. I am making number five a tie between Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch. And the reason for that is because I think that without one, you wouldn't have got the other. And the two of those movies – Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels was something that I saw in the theater in New York City. My dad and I went down to the city for the day, and we stumbled on that film. I had no clue who Guy Ritchie was. I had no idea what the film was. We knew nothing about it. We were in Sony Theaters, like Lincoln Center, and we saw a marquee for it, and there was like a blurb from a review that was blown up on a cardboard display, and we were like, all right, let's see this. And that movie fucking blew me away. And I was in college and film school, and I immediately went that weekend when I left New York and went home back to New Hampshire, went to school, and I was trying to figure out how to get my camera to ramp speeds because I'd never seen, you know, the ramping of speed done like that. And I just think it's just a wild film. It's so much fun, Lock, Stock, and it introduced so many great actors to American audiences, Jason Statham most especially. And then you got Snatch, which is kind of like Lock, Stock all over again, but a little bit different, more polished, more slick. Got Brad Pitt, of course, Benicio del Toro, the big Hollywood cast. I think both of them are just a great, great 1-2 punch bunch of style, of grittiness, you know, harkening back to some of those old 70s movies, but still with a lot of modern stylistic touches. I personally don't think that Guy Ritchie's done anything better than those two movies. So I'm just sort of lumping them together as one entry at number five, which feels organic enough to think that my cheating isn't too awful. So
correct.
My number four is a film called Performance, which is a movie that really, really, really blew me away when I saw it actually not too long ago. It's a really unique film. Nicholas Roeg directed it. It's very hard to describe sort of in words. It has your traditional sort of, you know, murder crime plot. But it's a lot more than that. Mick Jagger's in it, you know, playing essentially like a version of himself, this like former rock star. And, there's this whole, it's a very drugged out atmosphere, and it's just a very, very unique British gangster film. Came out in 1971, I think early 70s, 1970, I think. It's a really cool film. I highly recommend people track it down. I picked it up on Blu-ray not too long ago, and Nicholas Roeg's obviously a very interesting filmmaker. James Fox, that's right, he's in the film. He's excellent. Really cool movie. My number three would be The Long Good Friday. Obviously, you know, what can you say about it that's bad? Nothing. It's a classic for good reason. You know, Bob Hoskins' performance, just one of those great cinematic performances that, you know, when you see it, you realize, you know, how great of an actor, you know, he was. If you're not, you know, hugely familiar with his work, just a fantastic actor. You know, John McKenzie directed it. It's got airtight plotting. It's one of those movies where you wouldn't likely get a film like it these days. It's so good. I know you're a big fan of it, so I'll let you go. I'll let you go crazy on that one when it gets to you. My number two is going to be The Hit, which is a Stephen Frears film, Terrence Stamp. Just a very, very cool, sort of cerebral British gangster film. It's a unique film, 1984. And I'm sorry, not Terrence Stamp. What the fuck am I talking about? Well, he's in it, of course, too. But John Hurt and Tim Roth, they're sort of like the leads, the co-leads. Terrence Stamp figures into the plot as well. And it's a really cool movie. It sort of mixes like British gangster movies and hitmen. It's a really good flick. My number one, without question, is the, you know, movie that we've been talking about tonight, Sexy Beast. You know, it's just one of those movies. It's timeless. It's always going to be amazing. You know, it had the right amount of homage to older stuff while being its own thing. And, you know, in modern times, and, it's been a favorite movie of mine, honestly, for the last 16 years.
Yeah. I love your list, and I have similar movie titles on mine. And you're right. I'm going to gush hard over The Long Good Friday, because that's on my list. My number five is Neil Jordan's Mona Lisa, which kind of isn't a crime movie, but it is at the same time. It's not necessarily a gangster movie or like any of the movies that Nick has on his list or I will for mine, but I have always loved this film to death. I love Bob Hoskins, and I'm a huge proponent of Bob Hoskins. I feel that he's truly an underrated and undervalued actor.
Mm-hmm.
And
most people,
I don't think
Roger
people,
Rabbit, you know, I mean, which is
right.
Which is an
Roger Rabbit
film.
Which he's brilliant in both of them.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
But you know, I think the heart of Bob Hoskins certainly lies in a lot of the 80s English cinema. And I can't help but think when I was watching Sexy Beast earlier today that, you know, Bob Hoskins probably could have done a halfway decent Ben Kingsley and Sexy Beast.
Oh, yeah.
And Bob Hoskins can ramp up that intensity hard. Not to get too far off pace, but what's that movie with Jet Li and Morgan Freeman, Unleashed? I don't know if you've seen that movie, but that movie's actually pretty fucking good, man. And Ben Kingsley, Bob Hoskins is amazing in that movie.
Dude, I saw Unleashed twice in the theater.
That's awesome.
I love movie. I think that it is. I was obsessed with it for a while. That was Louis Leterrier, I believe, before he did the right after the Transporter, before the first Transporter, before he did the Hulk. And that movie is kick ass. It's kick fucking ass. I always love the original title, Danny the Dog, and they retitled it, of course. And it's a nasty movie. Jet Li is very good in it. He gives a very good performance, and Hoskins is sick in it. It's a very underrated R-rated action movie that is just, it's ripe for rediscovery.
Right. Okay, so my number five, I don't know how many people have seen this. I'm pretty sure you have, but it's called I'll Sleep When I'm Dead.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's the Clive Owen.
Yeah, man.
Mike Hoskins.
Clive Owen, Malcolm McDowell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good.
It's a very good revenge movie. Revenge, just Clive Owen seeking out vengeance for the men who raped his brother. It's amazing. It's so good. That's when I was in a huge Clive Owen kick back in the day. I saw, like, the BMW Films movies, and I was like, who is this guy? This guy needs to be the next James Bond.
Exactly. And that was exactly what happened with me. I discovered Clive Owen and had to find out what this movie was all about, and I saw it. I was blown away. I forgot about that one. It's good.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a while, but it's certainly left an impression on me, and I need to just get the disc for it. My number three is the original Get Carter with Michael Caine. I mean, that movie's just fucking... That movie's just like the be-all, end-all Michael Caine movie in a way. It's just so awesome, man. I just love Michael Caine's career, and the guy's still churning out. Yeah, I mean, Youth is one of his best performances, and the guy's in his 80s. It's like, Jesus Christ. How he's just endured and just persevered, and he's like churning out stuff like Harry Brown and Youth, and he's in all of Nolan's stuff now, and the guy started with like Get Carter and a lot of English movies, and then he went Slumming and was in Jaws 3 and all sorts of stuff, and then he like came back hard.
Jaws 4.
Yeah, Jaws 4. Not even Jaws 3. No, Dennis Quaid went... Well, that was before Dennis Quaid was, like, a prominent actor. Yeah, Jaws' Revenge, Jaws 4, when Michael Caine rams the boat into Jaws and kills it. And he couldn't accept his Oscar for Hannah and Her Sisters because he was filming Jaws' Revenge. That's the greatest story Michael Caine ever tells. Yeah, and he says, I've never seen, and like when he's asked about Jaws 4, he says, I've never seen the film, but I've seen the house that built it. Like, Michael Caine's just so fucking cool, man. So that's my number three, love Get Carter. I'm sure everybody's seen that. If you haven't, just buy it, because you're going to love it. My number two is The Long Good Friday. I am fucking obsessed with this movie. I think it's one of the best movies ever made. Bob Hoskins in that film, that single shot, his reaction shot for, you know, the final 5 minutes of the film is one of the greatest things to ever be in a film of all time. And how he changes drastic emotions in those final moments of the film without having to say anything is just brilliant. And God, man, it's just, you know, I'm a big proponent of one day, maybe Nick and I are going to own a movie theater, a podcast from Softy Movie Theater, and there's going to be double features playing constantly, and it's going to be shit like Mona Lisa and Taxi Driver, and then it'll be like The Long Good Friday and Thief. Because, you know, The Long Good Friday, I haven't seen anything remotely like The Long Good Friday until, and here's my plug that everybody's tired of me plugging, but I haven't done it in a long time, so I don't feel as bad, but that's the reason... One of the many reasons why I love the second season of True Detective so much is because they just took so many elements from movies that we love, like Long Good Friday, Thief, Heat, Chinatown, all sorts of stuff, and turned it into like this magnetic limited this magnetic season of LA noir. And the second season of True Detective borrowed heavily on The Long Good Friday And I think my number one film of all time does, too. Not my number one film of all time, but my number one gangster, English gangster movie does, and that's Sexy Beast. So I match Nick with that. Sexy Beast is one of the best movies ever made. And ever since I was reawakened to the film, I've watched it back-to-back a couple of times, especially when I got the Twilight Time Blu-ray, and I watched it in both aspect ratios, which I think was a fantastic feature that they added on to the Blu-ray. So everybody go to screenarchives.com and purchase Sexy Beast on Blu-ray. And Nick and I will get a check in Twilight Time.
My runners-up would include Layer Cake, which I think is excellent. Daniel Craig pre-Bond, I believe, Daniel Craig. Very cool flick, produced by directed by Guy Ritchie's producer, Matthew Vaughn. And that was his first movie. Very good flick. Down Terrace, which is Ben Wheatley's first movie. Very cool film. A family gangster movie, British gangster movie. Very unique. Really, really gritty flick. The original Italian Job. I guess you could call that a British gangster film in some respects.
In Bruges is on my runners-up, by the way.
Yeah, In Bruges, you know, has certain elements, too. And then this is one that's underrated.
It's just a UK movie.
What did you say?
I said it's just a UK movie.
Yeah, just in general.
Anyway.
Gangster Number One. That's another good one.
Yeah, I have not seen that.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I mean, it's not like the greatest movie you've ever seen, and it's like a snug genre entry. Like, it does its job, you know what I mean?
Right. Interesting.
But good flick to put on your list, Gangster Number One.
Yeah.
Paul Bettany.
I like I mean, my runners-up would essentially be yours, too. I just wanted to add The Craze. I always really liked that movie, the original one.
Which I got to revisit after seeing Legend and enjoying.
I think that's on Netflix Instant or Amazon Prime, I want to say. Because I just recently watched it on one of the two of them, so... Definitely check out The Craze.
Yeah, and I
all right, now,
and certainly Hardy, Tom Hardy's dual performance in Legend.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet.
It's entertaining. The entertaining movie, great performances.
Yeah, I haven't seen that yet. Okay, now we're going to get into the top five Ben Kingsley performances. And we have, let me look at his IMDb real quick. Oh, it doesn't give me a count of how many movies he's been in. It's been a
lot. It's a lot of paycheck work, though, man.
Yeah, and I'm sure that... You know what's interesting about Ben Kingsley, too? So I was thinking about this and I was looking over his filmography, is how he just kind of is like a Middle Eastern guy that plays English people really well, but he also typecast as like Indian,
yeah.
Which he, I think, is, actually. I think his ethnicity is. Yeah, I'm looking it up on IMDb. He was born Krishna Bahanji. In England. So, yeah. His dad was a medical doctor with Indian descent. And his mom was English. So that makes sense. But yeah, he's like obviously Gandhi. But then he's in what? He's in like that King Tut miniseries. And then he was in, you know, the Night of the Museum movies is like an Egyptian. And then wasn't he in Noah? Or... whatever that Ridley Scott movie was he in one of those movies?
I think he might have been in. I've tried to. I don't remember much of Exodus.
He's in Exodus, yeah.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Is he? He's not in Noah. No.
No.
Yeah, and then he's in The Dictator. But yeah, he's just kind of had this interesting career. Prince of Persia, yeah, where he plays another Indian guy. So Love Guru, awesome. Hope he got paid for that one. The worst day of my life is if Ben Kingsley ever listens to the podcast.
Listen, if I was an actor and someone dangled...
I would be the biggest whore.
Yeah, someone dangled Jerry Bruckheimer dangles $5 million for me to go hang out, you know, on a Mike Newell set with Prince of Persia, you know, I'll probably do it. You know what I mean? Like,
Oh, yeah. I know. Be like, oh, you want me to work in a... Uli Bull movie, and he's going to pay me like $5 million for 3 minutes? Okay, where the fuck do I sign up?
I forgot he was...
Speaking of him, everybody needs to watch the movie what is it called? It's like Kingdom Hearts Knight's Tale with Jason Statham. And dude, this movie is the shittiest version of Lord of the Rings you've ever seen in your entire life. And Jason Statham's the hero in it.
What's it called?
And Ray Liotta. It's called, let me look it up.
Are you talking about Dungeon Siege?
Yes! Yes! Dungeon Siege.
So bad.
And the Name of the King, a Dungeon Siege.
Oh, yes,
tale.
The Name of the King.
Okay. First of all, the sequel came out with Dolph Lundgren that's awesome, too, where he's like a contemporary soldier that time travels back to medieval times. And he's like fighting with an AK-47. It's fucking great. Okay, but this first movie, In the Name of the King, a Dungeon Siege tale, seriously, everybody needs to see this movie because it's awful, but it's got Jason Statham, Ron Perlman's in it, John Rhys-Davies, Claire Forlani, Christina Loken, Matthew Lillard, and the best part of this movie, I swear to Christ, is Ray Liotta plays an evil sorcerer. Oh! And Burt Reynolds is the fucking king in the movie. Dude, seriously.
You can't make this shit up.
No, like, if I were slumming hard, I would want my face all over this movie, dude. This movie is fucking gold. It's got a 3.8 on IMDb, and it's that's a little high for it. But seriously, this movie is great. Anyway, Ben Kingsley's not in that movie, but he should have. I think he was in Blood Rain, though.
Like, yeah, that's the one he was in, Blood Rain.
And Michael Madsen in that, too. They're like vampires.
How did Uwe Boll get, like, 10 movies made in, like, the course of, like, 3 years? It's nuts.
Dude, I have 3 movies made? Are you kidding me? You gotta look at his filmography.
No.
Three movies. This guy?
No.
This guy's, like, 2013, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 movies.
It doesn't make any sense. I've never understood the whole Uwe Boll thing. You haven't heard about him recently.
No, I think he's going to make another Rampage movie, Rampage, President Down. But no, I think he quit filmmaking for a while. I think, like, the constant internet shaming finally rattled the man. And In the Name of the King, The Last Job, this came out in 2014. Who is, Dominic Purcell's in it, who's in, like, all of his shit now. This cast is not nearly as interesting, guys. Seriously, seek out the first one for Ray Liotta's evil sorcerer is amazing. It's just, like, it's like Henry Hill from Goodfellas, but in this weird cloak. And he's, like, shooting lightning and stuff. It's like, you seriously, you're Nick's right. You can't make this shit up. At all. It's that good. But, okay. So, let's get back to the matter at hand. And let's do you go first with top 5 Ben Kingsley.
Which all is right.
Top conversation. We need to do a dungeon. We need to do a, what is it called? In the Name of the King? In the Name of the King. I don't know what the first one
is. We should do In the Name of the King commentary.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yes, we're going to do that. Seriously.
But you have to buy it for me on DVD because I won't buy it.
I will buy the fuck out of it. I'll buy you. I own the Blu-ray. I own the first 2 Blu-rays. The Uwe Boll. I'm buying that. Dude, I am so excited about this idea. I am buying the Blu-ray on Amazon right now. And you know what? To fucking hype up this podcast of the commentary, we're going to do a giveaway of this movie on our Facebook page. So stay tuned, everybody, because you can get a free... What the hell is this movie called again? In the Name of the King... Hang on. In the Name of the Jesus. Now, In the Name of the King. Yeah. Okay. So you can get a 650 Blu-ray for free as a giveaway. It's the unrated director's cut, by the way. So this is just fucking, dude, this is amazing. I'm adding it to the cart right now and you're getting it.
All right.
Anyway.
My number.
Oh God, this is the greatest. I love these. See, I know you miss doing these solo podcasts. I don't have you in here. I'm going to have to get you. actress in here. But anyway, all right, go ahead.
We have to put on airs with these guests and shit. All right, so top five, Kingsley. Number five, I know that you won't agree with because I know you're not a big fan of the movie, but
oh god,
but maybe you like the performance. I think Iron Man 3 is an awesome film. It has more to do with the fact that it's a Shane Black movie through and through, I think, for me, than it does have anything to do with the fact that it's a Marvel Iron Man movie. I just think, for me, the twist and the reveal of that character, like when I saw the trailer, it was in my head. Ben Kingsley, and we've got spoilers here, it was in my head. This guy's the Mandarin, whatever the fuck that is. Like, he's the bad guy for the week. He's the flavor of the week for the bad guy. They got Kingsley to be the bad guy. Great casting. Can't wait. So when you found out that the dude was just some drunk British fool playing a role in a ruse, I nearly fell out of my seat. I didn't see it coming. I thought it was fucking hysterical. I thought it was inspired. It actually did something different for once. But more to the point, for Kingsley, he was really funny. And I just didn't expect him to be like that, like in bed with two women, like drinking and like the whole deal. Like, I just didn't expect it. And for an actor who's associated with so much intensity and so much drama, especially my number four pick, to see him do something so lighthearted and subversive and fun, I had to put it on my list. Number four, House of Sand and Fog. I was absolutely blown away by this movie when I saw it back in the day in the theater. I haven't seen it in a while, but it was one that I was really, really impressed with. It's a very, very dramatic movie. Great Roger Deakins cinematography. But you get just a powerhouse of an emotional performance, from Kingsley, excuse me. I just saw those pictures.
I'm sending Nick screen grabs of Ray Liotta from his Amazing Kick.
House of Sand and Fog, very intense film for people. I would recommend it to anybody who likes the intense drama, a lot of emotion. Jennifer Connelly is in it. She's really good in it. You've seen this film, right?
Oh yeah, it's on my list.
Gotcha. Okay. So number three for me, Searching for Bobby Fischer. He's
great.
Got a pivotal role in an absolutely brilliant film. This has been a favorite movie of mine for 20 years, or however old it is. I mean, I just it's a movie I watched repeatedly on HBO when I was younger. I think it's just a great, great, great movie. Written and directed by Steven Zaillian, and Ben Kingsley plays a very pragmatic, intense chess coach to a young kid, young chess phenom, a prodigy, and it's an amazing piece of acting and an amazing film, and I highly recommend that anybody with a family, anybody who likes good movies in general, but anyone with a family, you want to show this movie to your kids, because it's a good values movie without being preachy and annoying, and it's just a damn good piece of filmmaking. Number two, I have on my list, and it's funny, I'm just going to just throw it out. I didn't put Gandhi on my list, and the only reason...
Oh, my God.
And the only reason why I didn't put Gandhi on my list, the only reason why I didn't put it on my list is because I haven't really seen it in forever. And I know I know that he won every award. It's a classic. It's a, his performance is huge. It's one of those iconic performances. I don't remember enough from the movie. I'd really have to watch it again.
All right.
To have an informed.
You're going to buy In the Name of the King on Blu-ray for yourself, since you're not including Gandhi on your list.
Well,
that's awful.
Well, what can I say? I've got Schindler's List at number two. I think that his performance in that movie is fantastic. I think that's one of the most emotional films that I've ever seen in my life. I it's a film that I've seen a couple of times, and every time I see it, it means something different. And his performance in that movie is, I think, just note perfect. He's not the main character, but man, when he's on screen, he just does such a great job. And it's just, it's the right character and the right sort of the way that he expressed everything in that movie. I think is just fantastic. And number one, it goes without saying for me, is Sexy Beast. Like, nothing even comes close. It's a force of nature performance that you only get every once in a while. And, you know, like, you short of maybe a Bob Hoskins or somebody like that at a certain point in their career, I don't really think that there's many people that could do that performance.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. Okay. I'm going to do my I said Nick more pictures of Ray Liotta from In the Name of the King. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? Have you seen? Did you say you saw this or not? I can't remember.
I don't think I've actually seen this movie.
Oh my fucking
I think
God,
I've seen parts or something, but like,
you are in for a fucking treat for this movie. Oh, dude. Anyway, you know what? I bet we could get Uli Ball to come on and do the commentary with us. I think we've reached that point in our career, and he's reached that point in his career where we could make that happen. But anyway, I know. These pictures are just outrageous. That one where it's like face all puffed out, it's like, what the fuck? I want to know how much they got paid to be in this movie. How much do you think Ray Liotta and Burt Reynolds got paid to be in this
movie? The joke is that this probably wasn't anywhere near enough.
I know. It's like, we'll give you $15,000 for like 3 hours of shooting.
It's like,
you're like, all right, I have standard street.
You know that at some point on that set they got annoyed with something.
Look at Burt Reynolds' face in that picture. You don't think he was annoyed the whole time? Like, motherfucker, I was Smokey. Oh, no, I was the Bandit. You know what I mean? It's like, I was in Boogie Nights like 10 years ago. Look at me now. I'm fucking dying, laying in this fucking bed talking to, I don't know who the fuck he's talking to in that scene, but okay. This podcast is going to be a gut buster, everybody. All right, so I'm going to go through my Kingsley now. It has Gandhi on the list, and not Iron Man 3, spoiler alert. But my number 5, Ben Kingsley, is his role as Meyer Lansky in Bugsy.
Yeah.
I think he's so good in that movie, man. Yeah. He's just so understated in that movie. I think Bugsy's a masterpiece.
Great movie.
Regardless.
Bugsy
and
my runners-up.
What was that?
Bugsy and Dave were the two movies I had on
his list. I almost put Dave on my list, man, because you just feel so bad for the guy in that movie, because he's like, he gets sent to Africa because the president's just a piece of shit.
Yeah,
he comes back.
They're painting him to be like mentally incompetent.
Right. It's just so awesome.
It's a great movie. They don't make a movie like Dave anymore.
No, they don't make movies like Dave anymore. You're right. They don't make movies like Bugsy anymore either. Honestly, like a classic movie, you know, like period piece.
Levinson
movie. Yeah, that's Levinson, man. That's Levinson and Toback Script and Warren Beatty. That's the combi right there. So, okay. My number 4 is The House of Sand and Fog. I haven't seen that movie for a while either because it's so emotionally draining.
Yeah.
Ben Kingsley. Fierce in that movie in like this subtle way. That movie's so good. I should rewatch that this weekend. My number 3 is Schindler's List. I think Ben Kingsley's the comic relief in that movie, and that sounds terrible to say since that movie's just gut-wrenching and heartbreaking, but Ben Kingsley's character brings humanity to that movie in a very unique and special way. And I think a lot can be said about his performance in that. I don't know if he was nominated for an Oscar for that. I know Ralph Fiennes obviously was. I don't know if Kingsley was or not. I know Kingsley and Keitel were nominated for Bugsy. He was nominated for House of Sand and Fog. My number two, he was nominated for an Oscar for, and that's Sexy Beast. And, I mean, we've gushed about the Kingsley, aside from us laughing about Ray Liotta in The Name of the King. But Sexy Beast is just a tour de force movie all around. All the performances are fantastic. I mean, all these people are performing at 10s in this movie, and then Ben Kingsley comes in for the second act, and he's at like a 27 million. I mean, you can never understate or overhype Ben Kingsley and Sexy Beast. Because if you haven't seen this movie, or you don't have a good recollection of it and haven't seen it in a while, you're just not going to be prepared for Ben Kingsley.
Nope.
He's just, fuck, man, he's awesome. And then my number one is, I consider, I don't know about my podcasting partner, but my number one Ben Kingsley performance, I consider this one of the best performances in cinema history, is Ben Kingsley's Gandhi. I mean, whenever you have like three free hours, which I know you don't anymore since you've had with child, but yeah, man, Richard Attenborough just directed the shit out of that movie, and I better make sure I'm right.
Dude, I honestly, yeah, man, I saw this movie when I was like 10, 12, you know, like,
okay.
I haven't seen it.
I think I watched it last year. Here's the thing, though, but also, I mean, Gandhi's awesome. I don't know who shot that, but whoever shot it's amazing. But it's probably Deschanel, would be my guess.
Two
cinematographers,
Billy Williams and Ronnie Taylor, neither of whom I'm familiar with, but interesting.
Wow. Yeah, but, and then Daniel Day-Lewis, Martin Sheen are in it, too, which is cool. And Candice Bergen. So there's some, like, added incentive.
Yeah, I should watch this now. I'd probably be absolutely blown away.
Oh, dude, you'd be obsessed with this. You'd be sending me more screen grabs than I'm sending you of Ray Liotta right now if you watch Gandhi tonight. So, yeah, my number one's Gandhi. I love Ben Kingsley. Death and the Maiden almost made my list, but I bumped it. That is a goodie. That's a goodie that not a lot of people have seen. That's like podcast worthy for us.
And not only that, people don't like that movie. It's weird.
Really?
Like, I heard people rip on that movie for years, and I never understood it. I thought that before I even knew shit about Roman Polanski or Ben, I thought that movie was great. Right. So
yeah,
that's
that movie's
a good one.
That movie's good. I also want to throw a quick mention to him, Ben Kingsley and Hugo. I think he's great.
Yeah.
And he's good in Shutter Island. Everybody's great in Shutter Island. I just don't like the ending. That's just my hang up. But I watch it a lot. I rewatch it because I think that movie's brilliant. I just don't care for the ending. But aside from that, Ben Kingsley's awesome in it. but that's our podcast. This was a lot of fun, man. And I think the next one we're going to do without a guest is we'll do a commentary of, you know, what we should almost do for the commentary of In the Name of the King. You shouldn't watch it first. And this will be your first time watching the movie doing commentary on it. I think that would be brilliant.
Yeah, we'll have to figure this out.
All right. So we'll be back with more special guests and more regular episodes in the future and more commentary episodes. So thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thanks.